At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave. That's Tim over at the Supernatural News Desk, and we've got a lot of supernatural news to cover on today's program, Tim.
Yes, we
I'm going to just tease a little something about tomorrow, though.
Sure.
Timothy.
What? Wait, did I piss you off? Why are you calling me by my Christian name?
Timanthi.
That's my Christian name.
Tomorrow, we're going to have an interesting conversation on Beyond the Darkness. We're going to kind of traverse a little bit into the true crime realm again, Tim.
Really?
With a fascinating story, hosts of a new true crime miniseries podcast. And this looks to be really, really good. So we're gonna spend some time breaking down the case with them. Of course, we're going to go over a glossary look of it here in the 60 to 90 minutes we share with them. They go much more in depth over the arc of their entire program. And I think it's 6 or 8 episodes where they dig deep into this case. But it's a fascinating one. So make sure that you tune in tomorrow. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy that program. But let's get started now, Tim. We've got a lot of news to cover. Where shall we begin this week in the world of supernatural news?
We're going to go deep into the mind of Yvette Fielding from Most Haunted, Dave. That's what we're going to do.
Why would we do something like that, Tim?
Well, because it's fascinating, Dave.
Oh, to who, Tim?
Well, to the people who follow Yvette Fielding, Dave.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. I mean, yeah, Yvette Fielding. Okay, good. Yeah, we had her on our show back in, 2007.
Yeah, you don't find Yvette fascinating, Dave?
No, everybody I know just says she's not very nice to them. People that I've known on her production and other celebrity ghost hunters, I've kind of lost a little respect. I got to be honest. I could be wrong, but I just, you know, it's just a little bit of a bummer. But let's see what's going. What does frighten Most Haunted's Yvette Fielding?
But Dave, there's a nice little picture of her here, and she's sitting on a cute little leather type of. It's more like a love seat, and she's got a cute little bulldog in her lap, and she's smiling
from ear to ear. That's not a bulldog, Tim.
That's Carl.
I don't know. I don't even know if they're still together.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
When did that happen?
I'm not sure, Tim. I wish I was more up on the Fieldings love story.
Boy,
I'm
I'm
glad I'm not, but I'm just saying.
Wendy Williams today. I'm a bit of a bummer,
is what you're saying? I'm kind of a downer, a bit of a bummer and a downer?
We're sipping all the tea today with you, sir.
Yeah. Hello. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do one of these for me. Go, how you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, look at you. Oh.
You like that?
Yeah.
You doing?
That was nice.
All right.
Okay. So Most Haunted's ghost hunter, Yvette Fielding, reveals what really terrifies her. You'd think nothing could frighten the fearless ghost hunter. We know different. But, that's more soda than tea. Yeah.
No, I'm cracking a beer.
You're cracking a beer?
Story a little bit more palatable.
Okay. But that's all changed now, according to this article. With a huge sigh of relief, Yvette Fielding, who is looking adorable, it says here, in a pair of denim dungarees, She wears dungarees, Dave. Evidently, she does a lot of farming. Has just finished an appearance on Loose Women. What's Loose Women, Dave? Is there hope for me?
But it doesn't sound like a show you want to be a part of.
No, well, maybe not. Is there hope here, or what's the deal? Should I dress up?
Yeah, a little. Now that you know Carl might be out of the picture, and she's appearing on Loose Women, Tim. This may be the entry point you've been waiting for.
Maybe I should dress up, you know, and
yeah.
a little cologne on, you know.
A show called Most Horny starring Tim Dennis.
Yeah. I like it. Finally, yours truly gets a TV deal, huh?
Yeah.
Most Horny with Tim Dennis. I like it. I don't know. I was worried about Janet Street Porter, she says, with her hands pressed against her face.
Did she get impressed again her face?
Again her
I ain't
face.
Fur it and I ain't again it.
I ain't again it, Dave. I ain't fur it and I ain't again it. Again her face, Dave. But everyone was lovely and I did it. Everyone was lovely and I did it, she said. It was funny to think that someone with 33 years in the business and a career as an actual ghost hunter would be frightened of a live interview. But after 18 years of hosting and producing, really? 18 years? Of producing and hosting the hit show Most Haunted, she's turned her hand to something totally new, which she explains is the scariest thing she's done yet. She said, I had a really vivid dream where I saw a little boy called Archie, she explains. Somebody should tell her that's a comic book. It's a comic book. He had a backpack on filled with ghost-busting equipment, and when I woke up, I started writing it down, and now I've finished a children's fiction book. I'm a huge kid at heart anyway, and I always get a lot of feedback from fans who say, my kids love Most Haunted. So I wanted to create something that they could enjoy too. It took me 2 years, but I've written it. I've gobsmacked myself. She was quoted as saying, I see my mind just wanders in these things. Some of the events on Most Haunted, knives being thrown at cameramen, people being dragged upstairs by demonic spirits, evil ghosts leaving severe burns on crew members' arms, etc., in parentheses, aren't exactly child-friendly. Well, depending on how you raise your kids, I guess. So how will she indulge her spooky interests without terrifying the living daylights out of her young audience? Well, I wouldn't let my young kids watch Most Haunted, that's for sure. She laughs. And then she laughed and laughed and laughed, and they just guffawed and had a good time. But I love frightening myself to death, she went on to say. When my daughter Mary was 4, she asked me, why don't we all live forever, when I was explaining a family death? Well, boy, that's a question no parent wants to answer.
No, nobody does. Yeah, that's a tough one.
That is. It was heartbreaking watching her little face trying to accept it, so I think it's important for children, if they have lost a loved one, to understand that there is life after death, that grandma and granddad can hear you if you talk to them, and if you're very lucky, they can even visit you, she went on to say. They may play a song on the radio to remind you or create a smell you associate with them. It's comforting for children to know that. Since starting her career as a fresh-faced Blue Peter presenter at the age of 17, that's a hard one to get out there, Yvette went on to become one of the most iconic TV presenters of her time. Then when she married husband Carl back in 1999, doesn't say they've split, they had an idea that has landed her the unofficial title of the First Lady of the Paranormal. Ooh, there's a bunch of them, I bet, that would probably argue that deal.
Yeah. Rosemary Ellen Guiley was just rankled by that.
Yeah, I bet you there's going to be a cat fight. I pinch myself how things have turned out, and I never thought I'd still have this enthusiasm or passion for it, she went on to say. I go to bed at night thinking of inventions, for God's sake. Things that would help us communicate with the other side, she squeals excitedly. I would never like Prince. I would never have written that. I would never have written that line, by the way. I came up with this idea of drilling a hole in the top of the glass on a Ouija board and using copper wire to thread through the top of the glass. Then you just all touch the wire like the Victorians used to do. I see she's on the cutting edge of science. She said, I made a prototype.
She came up with the idea just like they used to do.
Yeah,
so that's not really coming up with the idea.
No, it's not really.
Okay,
she said, I made a prototype, touched the copper wire, and the glass moved. Imagine that, Dave. She also said, I got so excited, I was emailing scientists. And they probably didn't answer back. Although their response isn't always what Yvette hoped. We get spirits spelling out their names exactly when they died, and then we have historians back it up. But because it's on a TV program, it isn't taken seriously in the world of science. That's probably not the full truth, but, you know. Little old me gets frustrated, she said, and that's why I'm always trying to come up with inventions to prove it further. Living a wholesome family life with her husband and co-host Carl in Cheshire, her two children William and Mary, that's also a college, by the way, have become fully immersed in the spooky lifestyle. My daughter films with us now, and she's so much braver than me, explains Yvette. People have watched me get braver as the series has gone on, not to mention seeing the hairstyles evolve and the wrinkles appear. But now I've hit the menopause, and I've become a right wimp again. Menopause does that to you? You become a wimp?
I guess. I don't know. I've not hit menopause.
I'm trying, but it's just not working for me. Poking out of Yvette's handbag is her miracle swear-by menopause cure, a vape stick containing CBD oil. You heard it first here, gals. CBD oil.
Yeah, you know me.
Yep. It's the one thing she couldn't live without, she says. I buy pure CBD oil for it, and it's fabulous for the menopause, she explains. It's the only thing that can get me to sleep and help me relax. If I don't
that
take...
might explain the jitters now. She's a little little more paranoid with the CBD.
That's exactly what it is. She's getting the paranoia. Yeah. She says, if I don't take that, I'm awake all night. And then I look like a bag of crap the next day, and nobody wants that. She laughs. And then she laughs and laughs and laughs. But just now, because it's a CBD. But just now, how does the menopause affect her ghostly investigations? She says, I'm emotional. She shrugs. I'm a massive wimp. It sends me pathetic. It sent me pathetic, she went on to say. I'm grabbing hold of people's clothes, begging them not to leave me in the dark. Sometimes I sit in the car afterwards and sob, repeating the Lord's Prayer. That sounds like me at a McDonald's when they have no McRib.
Sounds like a hell of a job you got going there. It might be time to retire when you're sobbing and begging people to stay with you.
It might be. She says, my daughter thinks I'm crazy. I even sleep with the lights on now. Perhaps one of the reasons Yvette loves working so much is that she does it all with her beloved husband. He even did the illustrations for her new book. But spending every waking second together must come with its difficulties. It genuinely doesn't, she smiles. It's beautiful working together. We celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary a few weeks back, and I wore...
Sorry, Tim. I guess you don't get to field that, Yvette, after all.
I guess not.
No.
Unless I'm the homewrecker. Mm-hmm. She said, we celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary a few weeks back, and I wore a gorgeous white wedding dress. It was a nice day for a white wedding, Dave. It was a nice day to start again, I guess. She said, I love Carl.
Nicely played.
Yeah, thank you. She said, I love Carl to bits. He's my best friend. Aw. It felt like my right arm was missing when I went in the jungle to do I'm a Celeb. We just love being together constantly, and you didn't ask Carl that, but we had to speak for him. And I'd be absolutely lost without him, she smiles sweetly. The pair do, however, bicker like there's no tomorrow on camera. So what would Carl say his wife's best and worst qualities are? Ooh, this is the good part of the story. Here we go. He says,
it's about time we got to the good part.
That's right. He doesn't like it when I move his things, Yvette tells us honestly. Does any guy really?
No.
Let's just be honest. Let's have an honest moment here. He used to be a cameraman and had a Cliff Richard anniversary jacket where the lettering was 22 karat gold. Well, Carl certainly sounds like a hip cat, doesn't he, with a Cliff Richard anniversary jacket.
And all in gold.
All in gold.
Yeah. Well, good for him. He's living the dream. I can't pick. I love old music, too. So,
yeah. Yeah. He said, but I thought it was NAF, so I gave it to charity. That didn't go down well. Oh, Yvette. He'd say the best thing is my lasagna. It's one of the reasons he fell in love with me. Never leaving her side during our chat, it's clear Carl is Yvette's biggest supporter, but her family network are all proud of her success. I was digging out some Blue Peter pictures. Probably of Carl.
I think we've strayed quite a bit away from the paranormal at this aspect. Is there any more of this that actually has anything to do with our show, or are we just going down memory lane of her Blue Peter?
Well, Carl's got a Blue Peter picture. Isn't this something?
I don't think that it means the same thing here in the United States.
Oh, it doesn't?
Yeah.
I thought maybe.
I don't think so. Carl, no, Blue Peter is something different altogether, Tim.
Oh, it's not a. It's not actually a picture of a Blue Peter?
No.
Oh.
No. Blue Peter was like a TV show that she was a part of.
Oh. Yeah.
Before going on to Most Haunted.
Well, Yvette
is
does.
Is that about it then, or what?
Well, I'll go to the end here. Yvette does say she might be starting a new chapter of her career as a novelist, but she laughs and smiles through the chat. She says there's so much more she wants to do. She wants to go on a spiritual journey to Tibet, find out who she really is. She wants to travel the whole world, yada-da-yada-da-yada-da. And there you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, you brought up McRib.
I did.
And one problem we never run into is getting tired of eating them because they're never here long enough. But I guess if it was a year-round tasty treat, we might hit that wall.
Right.
But we wouldn't be the only one to run into a problem like that, Tim, where you just get tired of eating the same thing, right?
Right.
I mean, as a perfect example, our next story, 5 arrested in an alleged South African cannibalism ring after man tells police, I'm just tired of eating human flesh. Mm-hmm. More than a week ago, a South African man walked into the police station with a morbid confession. He's just tired of eating human flesh, he told the police. The officers questioned the man's bizarre claim and noticed he gave off a rancid smell. That's what local media reported, Tim. Then the man revealed the source of the stench, showing the officers a bloodied human hand and leg, a police spokesman told the Washington Post. The man, who said he was a traditional healer, you know how those are, always carrying around a arm and a leg, proving that even in the traditional healing, medical expenses are way too high.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to cost you a hand and a leg there, Tim.
An arm and a leg at that, yeah.
Yeah, well, those guys, he's got the discount plan, so it's just a hand and a leg.
Right, right.
Yeah. He said he was a traditional healer. He led officers to a small beige home in the farming town of Estcourt in the KwaZulu-Natal province of South Africa. Inside the house, Tim, police found a collection of other body parts. Colonel Thambika Mbeble, a spokeswoman for the South African Police Service, told the Post, the discovery touched off a criminal case that has attracted global attention and led police to uncover that they suspect is a cannibalism ring, where there are a total of 5 men ages 30 to 32 that have been arrested for possessing human body parts. 2 of them claim to be traditional healers. A number of other families with missing or slain relatives are now wondering whether their loved ones' deaths may have come at the hands of the alleged cannibalism ring. One local woman outside the court appearance told a local television station her nephew went missing in 2015. His body was later found mutilated. She came to the court appearance, she said, to see whether she could identify one of the suspects in connection with his death. Mbeble said that police believe the men were working together as part of a larger, like kind of a chain restaurant, I guess, Tim.
Hmm.
Larger syndicate. We expect to arrest more, Mbeble said, adding that the case was both shocking and unusual. We've never heard of this. The men, South African news outlets report, are charged with murder, conspiracy to commit murder, attempted murder. However, it is still unclear how many people have died. Police have not yet identified the human remains. Meanwhile, Andrew Zimmern's brand new episode of South African Treats is going to be on hiatus, Tim.
No, no.
The accused man appeared in court for a bail hearing on Monday as hundreds of locals protested outside, shouting, chanting, and holding up signs that read, "No to cannibalism." That's a pretty good rule of thumb everywhere, Tim.
That really is, yeah.
One protester held up a sign that translated as, "We're not KFC, Nando's, or Chicken Lickin'. We're humans. We're not edible."
That's debatable.
I wonder if chickens start walking around with signs like that, how would people react?
They probably debate that highly.
Yeah.
They're pretty tasty.
Or they debatter them and then debry them. Mbeble declined to prove details about the human remains discovered by police, saying the police cannot assume what the accused were doing with the body parts. But descriptions and so I think you don't have to wonder. He said they were eating them. You know?
Yeah.
We're not going to assume anything. You smell the rancid meat on his breath, and he's holding a hand and a leg with gnaw marks. I think case closed, Tim.
Yeah.
If I were Dave Schrader, defense attorney, and got this call, I'd take a hard pass, Tim.
You would?
I would. This is a case I feel like I might be running into a loser. Yeah. So, descriptions in South African and British news outlets paint a gruesome scene. Really? Thank you for that, because I guess we couldn't just picture that on our own when you said cannibalism ring. In the home of the first man arrested, some reports say human ears were found cooking in a pot in the home.
Mm,
other body ears. Parts were stuffed in a suitcase. Is that kind of a marinating technique for human flesh?
It is. A little Lowry salt in a suitcase, and boy, you got some good eating. Yeah.
An American tourister?
Yes. How'd you guess?
Not only luggage, but the meal of the day, an American tourister.
Yeah.
It is believed that they were to be served to his customers, who were told they had magic properties and would convey money, power, and protection, the BBC reported. Apparently, the people are eating didn't ever take advantage of those services, Tim. The man who first turned himself into police was reportedly nicknamed Mukanavu, or Corruption. He had moved into the home about 2 months ago, the man's landlord told News 24, adding that he had no idea about the body parts hidden inside. His neighbor told media outlets he had noticed a foul smell coming from the home. South African newspaper The Sunday Times wrote that the arrests uncovered a deep, dark secret in the town that could extend back some time. At least 3 graves were desecrated in June in the surrounding area. Oh, you're not even eating the fresh meat?
No. Yeah.
Oh, you're digging it up? The only time you do that is a pig roast, where you've started the fire first, then put the pig in, then covered it, Tim.
I've heard of like 30-day aged steak, but not like a couple
of
years.
That's a real dry rub right there.
That is.
It's not known whether these dug-up graves are connected to the alleged cannibalism ring. I would hope not. That's substandard meat. Police have not completed DNA testing on the body parts they seized. But one family told the BBC and local media outlets that they believe the remains were those of 25-year-old missing woman who lived about 22 miles west of Estcourt. The mother of a 2-year-old boy was last seen July 25th last year, relatives told the BBC and Sunday Times. She had left for the town of Pietermaritzburg, about 60 miles south of Estcourt, to visit her grandmother. She never showed up. Are we sure that if she was wearing a red hood, it might have been a wolf that took advantage of that situation, Tim?
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, after police made the arrests in the case, they met with the woman's relatives and asked them what she had been wearing the day she was last seen. The family members told her she wore black leggings, a shirt, and a bag with jeans stuffed inside. So no red hood, Tim. Little Red Riding Hood, not the victim in this case. A police officer left the room and returned with an outfit that matched the family's descriptions. Soaked in blood, relatives told the Sunday Times. The family was told a mutilated body was found east of Estcourt. Mabele said police could not yet confirm the identity of the body, but speaking to a local television station, she has urged families of missing people to come forward to police with DNA samples. Residents of the surrounding villages have been swept up by a wave of fear, avoiding walking on the streets after nightfall, the Sunday Times reported. The allegations have also tainted the practice of traditional healing, a prevalent source of medical care in South Africa, particularly in rural communities. There were more than 200,000 traditional healers in the country, and traditional healthcare providers are the first stop for South African patients in up to 80% of cases. So I guess that makes our medical care here in the United States not seem so bad, Tim.
Yeah, it's pretty darn good.
So let me get this straight, Tim. Your diabetes has been acting up. You're having neuropathy pain. I'd like you to chew on the ear of this man. Suck on the earlobe for 30 minutes a day, gnaw on the cartilage for at least an hour a week, and then let me know how you're feeling 2 months from now.
Sick to my stomach, pretty much.
Another woman outside the court admitted she had previously sought medical care from one of the charged men, the Sunday Times reported. She had asked for an herbal remedy to help her 17-year-old niece, who suffers from an illness in her womb. Inside the court hearing, one of the men wept during the proceedings, local news reported. A lawyer for the men said their clients no longer wished to apply for bail. In the days after the arrests, local politician Mthembendi Majola organized a community meeting to help residents come to terms with the gruesome allegations. Some admitted to previously consulting with these healers. Most residents were shocked by this and now live in fear, Majola told the BBC. It cannot only be one body, Majola told the Sunday Times. There is much more and many more people involved in this. Yikes. Yeah, that's the town like where you get invited over for barbecue. You have to be questioning, are you on the menu or just there to enjoy the menu?
Yeah, when you bring your own sauce, you don't know if you're seasoning yourself or somebody else. Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. That's what I have to say, Tim. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. But
you know what doesn't give me the creeps, though, Tim?
What's that?
True car.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every car comes with its share of stories. Nothing like we just heard, Tim, but that ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up on your first date. You remember that. Oh, maybe that luxury package you got after your big promotion. Or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar. Simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Does it have navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew that was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offers are not available in all states. All right, Timothy, where shall we go next in the world of supernatural news?
Well, David, we go from using seasoning salt to season some human to using salt to ward off evil spirits at Walmart.
Salt to ward off evil spirits at Walmart, you say?
Yeah. We okay. go to Florida, and we reference WFLA, the Flay.
Ah, the Flay, one of our favorite news outlets.
Oh, yes, it is. Hudson, Florida, to be exact, where a Hudson man is behind bars after deputies with the Pasco Sheriff's Office say he trespassed a Walmart hoping to ward off evil spirits. I don't blame him, to be honest with you. I've been at plenty of Walmarts, and I truly do believe evil spirits exist at Walmart.
They sell a lot of salt there, Tim. If that were the case, I don't think there'd be anybody in Walmart.
Just in one area. Dave,
yeah, just well, I guess there's that.
One area. Yeah. 38-year-old Damian Cantrell entered the Hudson Walmart on June 2nd, pouring salt all over the floor and on his feet to ward off evil spirits.
Huh. I say, one is wont to do when they enter a Walmart.
I say solid plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a plan. I don't know how solid.
Well, I mean, how many evil spirits are going to come near you?
With salt on your feet? Probably evil and good spirits might avoid you at that case.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that guy? Why is he pouring salt on his feet at Walmart?
And all over the floor. I mean,
at Kmart, I could understand, Tim.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Walmart's a step up. Why aren't we getting the Lowry seasoning salt, at least?
Oh, well, that'll attract the demons. I mean,
yeah.
Lowry's are attractive.
All right, so wait, I got to hear this. So he goes in and begins pouring salt on his feet.
And all over the floor, yeah. A Walmart manager told deputies Cantrell then proceeded to leave the store and lay in the small wood section of the Walmart parking lot. Because, you know, you're exhausted after you get rid of all those evil spirits. Cantrell, who had previously been charged with trespassing at the Walmart, was arrested for trespassing yet again and taken to the Land O'Lakes Detention Center. That was pretty much his story, Dave. He came in, poured salt all over the floor and on his feet. Then he left the store, laid in the small wood section of the parking lot there in Walmart.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's it? Really?
That's it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim.
Short, sweet, to the point.
It's that point in the show.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about.
I think so.
It's cold gin time again.
We have a cold gin section of our show.
I just felt like we should.
Oh, we should, yeah.
Gin, 8 Things to Know About the Supernatural series. A 5-episode Arabic original Netflix series is going to be released on June 13th. In over 190 countries, Tim. So this was just released a few days ago. Gin is the latest in Netflix's long line of experiments, but it's the first to cater directly to the Middle East. The 5-episode Arabic language teenage supernatural drama will be available from June 13th in more than a dozen languages, capable of reaching millions of eyeballs in other regions. Much like Netflix's previous foreign language success stories, Dark and Money Heist, the streaming service will test whether there's an untapped market for a show like this, which could set the tone for Netflix's other upcoming Arabic language originals, Paranormal and the Al Rawabi School for Girls. I got to be honest with you. I got a little turned on reading that one.
Did you?
As we await the show's imminent release, here are 8 things you need to know about the cast, the story, and the real-life origins of the Djinn, Tim. 8 things you didn't know that you needed to know. Number one, Jin is the first of three Netflix originals coming soon. Jin is Netflix's first original Arabic series, but the streaming giant has announced two other Middle Eastern series. As I mentioned, Al Rawabi School for Girls will be another teen-centric series launching sometime in 2019. The show on that case will be revolving around a bullied girl who seeks revenge, only to discover that no one is all good or all bad, herself included. So it's a feel-good show, Tim. No. But for those that listen to our show, the streaming service's third Middle Eastern original show, Paranormal, will be geared more towards adults, Tim. The 1960s mystery drama will be based on the best-selling books by late author Ahmad Khalid Tawfiq, and will center around Dr. Rifat Emsmil's experiments with supernatural forces. Paranormal is Netflix's first foray into Egyptian drama. The most important thing, number two, to know about the show is about a group of teenagers trying to identify Jin living among them, Tim. Ooh. It's set in modern Amman and ancient Petra. Jin follows a group of Arab teenagers experiencing friendship and budding romances. Following a school trip to the ruins of Petra, someone at Seven Hills Academy, Tim, unwittingly invites vengeful Jin, supernatural creatures, into their lives, and the students must attempt to save the day. But how will they pinpoint the angry Jin when everyone in high school seems to be angry about something? It's a good question.
That is a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a young adult series introducing new Middle Eastern talent, Tim. So Netflix originals like Stranger Things and On My Block, those have kind of amazed us with their strength of their unknown actors. Much like these coming of age predecessors, Jin introduces us to an ensemble of new young faces. I won't bother telling you all their names because we'll probably never hear from them or see from them again.
No.
Number four, this show could change the landscape of Arabic television forever, Tim. That's what they're claiming. With Jin, several things feel new. The subject matter, the target demographic, the young ensemble, the school setting, the five-episode format, and the fact that it's an original production created for a video-on-demand streaming platform. Number five, Jin will launch Arab programming to a global audience in more than 20 languages when it releases internationally. On the 13th, the five episodes that span 30 to 45 minutes each will be available in 26 languages in more than 190 countries to 148 million subscribers around the world. That's a lot of subscribers.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Jin is, of course, not a new concept. This is the number six important thing to know about the series, Tim. It's an original screenplay, yes. But the general concept of the Jin is fairly common in pop culture and folklore. Number seven, the show was filmed in Jordan. The film was not showed in Jordan, though, where other featuring a Jin recently shot, that, of course, being the remake of Aladdin.
Hmm.
And number eight, the origins of Jin predate mankind, and they're widely referred to in English as genies, Tim. Genie! Jin are creatures found in mythology, folklore, and is in Islam. Let me try that again, Tim, with my teeth in.
All right.
Jinn are creatures found in folklore and in Islamic theology. I don't know when I put my teeth in why I suddenly have a hoity accent, Tim.
It'll
According to Islam, jinn are invisible creatures made out of smokeless fire and created before man. They can be good or evil and can take many different forms, including human form. In English, the word genie, the singular form of jinn, is translated into genie. The creature appears in popular folk literature, including the genie or genie who helped street urchin Aladdin in 1001 Arabian Nights. Jinn are originally and generally defined as spirits, supernatural creatures, or any being with that cannot be sensed or detected by humans, Tim.
Hmm.
That's the eight most important things you don't need to know. I'm willing to watch it. I'd love to see different cultures' takes on the supernatural. That's why I wanted to share that story, because I think that's kind of an interesting aspect, that we get to see something from Egyptian and Arabic TV that would deal with the things that fascinate us so much.
Most definitely, especially the psychology of what exactly scares different cultures. That's yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
All right. Where are we going next?
Well, let's stick with entertainment, Dave. July of 2020 is an important date, because that is when Ghostbusters 3 drops in theaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Ghostbusters 3 is set to start production as early as next month And thanks to a new interview with writer-director Jason Reitman, we now have a better idea as to what the film's going to be about. Speaking at Ghostbusters Fan Fest over the weekend, Reitman professed his love for the franchise and how it shaped the concept for his modern sequel. He's quoted as saying, "Going into making this film, we wanted to make a love letter to the original movie. I thought I was going to be this indie dude who makes Sundance movies, and then this character came to me. She was a 12-year-old girl. I didn't know who she was or why she popped into my head, but I saw her with a proton pack and the story began to form. And it formed over many years. Actually, it started with a girl and all of a sudden it was a family. The concept of family as a through line from the new Ghostbusters film is actually an interesting yet completely appropriate choice for Reitman, as his father Ivan directed the 1984 original and its 1989 sequel. The threequel is set to star Captain Marvel's McKenna Grace as a young preteen paranormal investigator who's joined by her mother, Avengers Infinity War's Carrie Coon, and brother Stranger Things' Finn Wolfhard, in eventually picking up the phone and busting some ghosts. It's interesting to note that Reitman says his idea for the movie has been developing over many years, though considering that Paul Feig's Ghostbusters reboot just came out in 2016. The film was expected to kick off a whole new wave of sequels starring Kate McKinnon and Melissa McCarthy, but middling box office returns and online trolling controversy kept Sony from moving further in that direction. Instead, Reitman and company shocked the world with a surprise teaser trailer paired with the announcement that a Ghostbusters 3 set in the main continuity of the earlier 80s films was actually happening. This weekend, also came the news that Sigourney Weaver, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, and Dan Aykroyd would be returning as their original characters as well, having read and seemingly approved of the script. While all this sounds like a dream come true for fans, we're going to have to wait a little bit to actually see if it all pans out, as Ghostbusters 3 won't hit theaters until July 10th, 2020. Fingers crossed, though.
That's not that far from now.
No, it's not. Yeah. And they're saying this next month is when production's supposed to start. So,
how exciting, Tim.
Yeah.
Tim, have you ever been in the kind of relationship where you felt like, you know, your partner was just in search of a reason to break up with you?
Yeah, plenty of times.
Have you ever reached the dead end of a relationship and used even, like, I don't know, the silliest reasons to create that breakup?
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah.
And, you know, breaking up, as the song says, can be very hard to do, especially when one of you are over it while the other one is still deeply in love. While the "it's not you, it's me" and "you deserve someone better" has become completely outdated, you can draw some inspiration from this attempt of a breakup story that I've got for you next, Tim.
Okay.
A woman has gone online seeking help after her boyfriend broke up with her because he was totally sure that she was a witch. And he didn't imply that she's just an ill-natured woman, Tim.
Hmm.
When he said witch, he meant that she's an evil spirit inhabiting a body. Now, according to sources, the woman, who's been unnamed, took to an online advice column and wrote about how her boyfriend of 3 years has always been interested in the paranormal and how he was utterly convinced she is an evil soul. Peter, the boyfriend, has always had an interest in the paranormal and things like that. But over the past 6 months, however, Peter has moved further left of the socially accepted idea of normal. He's become convinced that I'm the reincarnation of an evil witch. This is really setting it in motion, Tim, mm-hmm. to get out of a relationship. If that's what he either believes it or he's really weaving in an interesting narrative.
Yeah, he is.
She goes on to say how she would have been relieved if Peter were actually looking for a silly reason to break up. The fact that he is 100% serious is what's really creeping her out. He wants to end a 3-year relationship because he's realized he's dating an evil spirit. That doesn't seem like the decision of a healthy psyche, and this all has just happened in a relatively short space of time, she said. I can guarantee that to anyone else, the issue at hand is a massive red flag. However, this woman still kind of wants to work things out, and she's actually seeking advice, Tim.
Hmm.
Remember that old saying, he's just not that into you?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that might apply in this case.
I think so.
It feels like I'm the only person in his life with a healthy dose of skepticism, and that it would be irresponsible to just leave for saner pastures. But he's a grown man, and he doesn't want me around anymore. So is there anything else I can do? Oh, God. Can I just stop the story and appeal to women right now, Tim?
Sure. Please do.
When somebody's working this hard to get you out of their life,
yep,
just get out of their life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Stop trying to save them, because most of the time they don't want to be saved. They just want to be away from you,
mm-hmm.
probably because they're doing something horrible on the side.
Yeah.
So if they're pushing you away and going to the extremes of trying to convince you and your friends and their friends and family that you're the reincarnation of an evil witch, I might just walk away cleanly. Don't try to save him. How do we get this through to women that it's not, oh, but I want to be the one to stay by his side through all of this?
Yeah, no.
Ladies, I say this as a concerned father, friend, and husband. Right. I want what's best for the women in my life. And that includes all of you amazing listeners across the world. So whether you're in a relationship with a man, a woman, a ghost, Tim, if they start giving you excuses like we need to break up because you're a witch in reincarnation form. You know, maybe they are dealing with a mental breakdown. Maybe it seems as though you're being cruel. It's not like they said, hey, I have cancer and we should break up because I don't want you to be that. I understand. Then there's this kind of allegiance, this want and desire to go through this with them and not leave them to be alone. But if his malady is he thinks you're a witch, walk away, Tim. Mm-hmm. I'm no Dr. Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no Oprah, Tim.
No.
I'm not.
No.
I'm no Geraldo Rivera, Tim.
You could be if you wanted to, but
I don't think I want to.
No,
but I am a concerned citizen, and I am your fearless leader in this journey into the darkness on the edge of town every weekend. And just let me tell you this, my female friends and cohorts across the galaxy, he's just not that into you. Find somebody that is. And although you say it's kitschy and cliche, he's just not that into you. Find somebody who is. You know, you can call Tim at 612. If they're looking for love in all the right places, Tim, it'd just be easier to reach you at 612.
Dave, it's,
boy,
it's
what?
It's more. Here's the thing, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because I do have myself a very careful screening process. It's easier to get a hold of me by email.
Email?
Yeah, Tim at Darkness Radio.
At Darkness Radio, so they can send in the applications for love that way?
Yeah, Tim@DarknessRadio.com.
So you don't want them to call 612?
No, Dave.
What? I'm just clarifying that's not what you want them to do.
No. Okay. Phone calls are not necessary.
She goes on to say, Tim, it feels like I'm the only person in his life with a healthy dose of skepticism, and it would be irresponsible to just leave for saner pastures.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a grown man, and he doesn't want me around anymore. So is there anything I can do? He's obviously not inclined to take my evil-inspired advice right now.
Okay.
Thankfully, the advisor on the other side of the column asked her to accept that the relationship is over and to place her safety first, because let's be real, the guy sounds weird.
Well, sounds weird.
Well, here's the problem is if he's not just trying to find a reason to bust up with you,
mm-hmm.
and he believes you're an evil witch spirit, you do have to start to show some concerns of what is his next plan.
Exactly.
If he thinks he needs to rid the world of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just saying that's when you end up boiling in somebody's pot.
Because right now he's at the he's on the roller coaster of psychosis, and he's going up the big drop. He's right at the
before
top
that
of the
plunge. You should just politely step off the rails and take the ladder down.
Yep, he's right at the top right now, and he's about to go over the edge, and he's mm-hmm. about to make that big plunge, like Dave said, and that big plunge includes violence.
Bad things for you.
Yeah, very bad things.
All right, Timothy, let's take another story before we have to take a break. Where are we going next?
Well, as long as we're talking witches, Dave, let's continue that theme. Inside the Essex pub, claimed to be the oldest in Britain, where it's haunted by a witch.
Uh-huh.
Let's just continue the theme. It is so ancient that it is featured in the Domesday.
How ancient is it?
It's featured in the Domesday Book of 1086.
That's not a funny joke response at all, Tim.
No, it's not. I'm sorry I let you down. Oh. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Some days I just don't have it. Yeah. If you are a fan of good ale, pub food, and the paranormal, then this
I am.
So am I. Then this pub could be the perfect match for you. Boy, I'm really just dropping. This article is not funny at all.
No.
The pub in Essex is claimed to be the oldest in the whole of the country and is even rumored to be haunted by a witch. Dun-dun-dun. I don't know.
Right.
Just trying
haunted
to throw some
by a witch. Okay.
Trying to throw some humor in it. Uh-huh. Traveling between Little Waltham and Braintree, you'll find the small village of Great Leys.
Wow.
I know, right?
Maybe we need to take a trip, Tim.
I know, right?
I'm kidding, honey. I would take you with me, darling.
Just especially if there's a witch at the end of the book.
Yeah.
It's here that you'll discover St. Anne's Castle Inn, a seemingly ordinary pub with a big secret. The pub is steeped in history and is said to be haunted by several specters, now called the Castle at Great Leys.
God.
It is owned by Pie and Pint Inns, who have two other pubs in Roxwell and Roquefort.
Wait a minute. Roxwell and Great Leys?
Yeah, I know.
Those are two of the greatest town names or villages ever.
Yeah.
He rocks well. Ah, he lays great. What is it? Great lays?
Great lays, yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
Weird.
On their website, they reveal the castle is steeped in spooky local legends. These tales tell of spirits haunting the pub and grounds of the castle, including the witch that was burnt at the stake at... I can't say that word.
The burnt wench steak and ale?
Scrapfuckers. Green.
What?
Scrapfuckers. Green.
I don't understand what you're trying to say.
Scrap faggot.
Just say it. We're adults here. Kids, earmuffs. Earmuffs. Uncle Tim has to say bad words.
It looks like you can go ahead and answer that, whatever it is.
I will. You take that while I answer my hotel room phone.
It looks like Scrap Fajos green. But that's what I'm going to say it as. It's probably not the... I could spell it. It looks very uncomfortable. And here in America, we don't say that word. I don't know. I think it's... You Europeans are weird. You Europeans should be ashamed of yourself. You use this name for a cigarette. I'm not even going to say the word. But its history runs much deeper than that. The oldest pub in England goes like this. St. Anne's Castle is nearly a millennium old and has a sign claiming to be the oldest inn in England, 1171 AD on its wall. It could even be older than that and is reportedly mentioned in the Domesday Book, published 20 years after the Norman Conquest in 1086. Historical evidence leads us to believe that the inn sold ale to pilgrims traveling to Thomas Becket's tomb back in the 12th century. Becket was Archbishop of Canterbury from 1162 to 1170 when he was murdered by followers of King Henry II of England. You may question its age when looking at it from the outside, but that's because there was a fire in the 1500s. The blaze destroyed the thatched roof, causing it to be replaced with tiles. But if you step inside, the timbers date back hundreds of years, and the cellars that lead to remains of tunnels that are rumored to be linked to link the inn, rather, with Great Leys Church and Leys Priory. There are many ghosts said to be haunting the site, according to reports, including a girl with blonde, curly hair, a little boy, a lady in a wedding dress named Elizabeth, a man who sits in the bar smoking his pipe, and even the ghost of a cat. The spirits are not thought to cause distress, but it's indicated that darker spirits lie in the area. Back in the 19th century, George Harry Benfield, could be either one, lived at the old schoolhouse within the village. He was hung in 1875 for murdering his wife and son after finding out his firstborn son, Thomas, was in fact his brother's child. It's said that he used a rope to strangle the pair and that his evil spirit has haunted the old pub. Mediums claiming to have the power to reach the afterlife have picked up on the spirits when they've visited St. Anne's Castle, connecting with not-so-Christian monks and a huntsman from the 1300s who practiced the dark arts. Many different groups have investigated the old inn over the years. I can't even say what the witch's name is. It's the witch of Green. You people are sick. That's all I'll say. People in England,
what is it?
Sick.
Have you said it yet? I had to take that phone call, which was very important because they want to steam clean my carpets, which is good, but not while I'm staying here.
You took a call from a salesman?
It was on the front desk. It's like, yes, we'd like to come in and steam clean your carpets. I'm like, I'm doing a radio show here.
Yeah, and what did they say to that?
Oh, so should we wait? I'm like, no, please do it while I'm doing the radio show.
No, come on in and just steam clean the carpets.
Yeah, please.
The first part of the word is scrap.
Okay, scrap. And what's the last part of the word?
It's what those weird people from England called a cigarette.
Scrap fag.
Gut.
Oh, scrap faggot. Oh, you don't have to avoid saying that. Let me in. Okay, so let's educate my friend Tim and all of our listeners. Faggots are bundles of sticks.
You can't say that!
You can. Wait, I'm
educating. You can't say that!
You can. In Europe, they're bundles of sticks. So scrap faggots means that they're piles of sticks, probably from cut down trees.
Listen, one of my good friends is an out wrestler, one of the first out wrestlers here in Minnesota. You can't
I'll
say
have you
that
know
word.
He's a good friend of mine as well, and he would back me on this because he wants people educated on the proper terminology. When you're in England, Tim, you want to take an elevator, it's a lift. When you're in Wisconsin and you want to sip out of a water fountain, it's a bubbler.
Okay.
When you're over in England and you're hankering for a smoke, you ask for a puff on a fag.
No, you Those can't all, do that!
You can, but I will tell you, Tim, that in America, when you and I were growing up, if you mouthed off to your kids, you might, or mouthed off to your parents, you might get a smack on the fanny, which is your buttocks.
Yeah.
In England, if somebody smacks you on the fanny, you're assaulting their vagina. So there's,
that's because they're bizarro world.
It is. But scrap faggots are just bundles of sticks from chopped down trees. You can when you know what it means, Tim. Don't be afraid of words. This has been brought to you by Darkness Dave. The more you know. Do, 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 do. All right.
Can't say that.
You can. I just did. I proved my point.
Can't say that.
Okay, where are we off to next?
Well, I mean, we're still in the story, Dave. We're giving you the background on the witch of that bad word green. I'll just say redacted from now on because I don't want to offend those.
Scrap faggot.
No, you can't say that.
Oh, my God, you can when it's the actual word. When it's the name of a town, Tim, you can say it because it's you're not saying, oh, that town is filled with a bunch of scrap faggots. Then you're being abusive.
No.
Right? But if you say it's the town of scrap faggots, that's what it is.
Those people have feelings too.
I'm not attacking anyone. You need help, serious help. And you know what? For that young lady that was worried about her boyfriend who thought she was a witch, be more afraid of the guy who's afraid to say scrap faggots.
You can't say that.
I just did. Oh. All right. So ghosts in scrap faggots.
One of the most infamous ghosts to be associated with the site includes Anne Hughes, or Hughes, I don't know why it has been spelled out both ways, who was burnt at the stake or buried nearby in the 17th century. She was accused of bewitching her husband to death, had a stake through her chest and burned at the crossroads. Anne was denied a Christian burial, and her charred remains were buried at a place called Green, with a large 2-ton stone placed on top to mark the site. Her spirit was greatly feared, and Anne's resting place remained undisturbed for centuries until the Second World War. The road that passed by the green needed to be widened for the new Borum airfield, and it was during the works when bulldozers displaced the stone. After this, rumors are that strange things began happening, from the church bells ringing at midnight with no one around to play them, to sheep out of their fields and no sign of how they got out. Strange noises were heard throughout the night, and painting supplies were moved to different rooms with no one there to move them. Harry Price, a ghost hunter, visited the inn on October 11th of 1944 and spent a day investigating. He claims a few hours before his arrival, 30 sheep and 2 horses had been found dead in a field after being poisoned. Price was shown a large boulder during the visit, weighing 200 pounds, which had been dropped outside a neighbor's door with no sign of who put it there. In his notes, the ghost hunter wrote, "Perhaps what interested me most was a certain bedroom in the St. Anne's Castle Inn, which cannot be slept in peacefully. Mr. Sykes asked me what I thought of it. I told him that the contents of the room appeared to have been shaken out of a pepper pot. He said, "It's always like this. Nothing will stay put. Over and over again, we have straightened up the place, only to find the next morning that everything was higgledy-piggledy." You people are weird.
Isn't that a series of grocery stores down south?
It is. Yeah, the higgledy-piggledy. They have them.
Those are the Piggly Wiggly. Sorry, oh, very close, though.
Yeah, it's same thing. We now use it as a lumber room, but boxes and furniture are scattered about night after night. No other part of the house is affected. The villagers even ask Price for his help stopping the hauntings. They asked me what they had better do about it, continued Price. I told them that if they believed the witch to be responsible for their troubles, the logical thing to do was to restore her tombstone to its original site. This they did ceremonially, there you go, at midnight on October 11th to 12th, placing the stone east and west in the traditional manner. The phenomenon ceased. The result of my visit was that I came to the conclusion that the green manifestations were partly genuine, partly the work of a practical joker, and partly due to mass hysteria. So there you go.
Speaking of hysteria, let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. More supernatural news right here on Beyond the Darkness. Hey, everybody, you have to check out this amazing new true crime podcast. It's called 22 Hours, An American Nightmare. It's about a murder that took place in Washington, D.C. A family and their housekeeper held hostage for 22 hours before being killed when the murderers set their mansion on fire. You'll be shocked by what they went through during those 22 hours, and you won't believe how they found this guy. I'm not going to ruin the ending, but all I'll say is pizza crust. I'm telling you, this is awesome. Podcast One teamed up with award-winning journalists from news giant WTOP to put this story together, and the podcast is great. Download 22 Hours, An American Nightmare now on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. New episodes every Monday.
Beyond the Darkness.
Welcome back to Beyond the Darkness. Tomorrow, we will be joined by the hosts of 22 Hours, An American Nightmare, to hear the overall gist of this case that you can now follow in this mini series on Podcast One, and it is amazing. So make sure you tune in tomorrow as we introduce and interview the hosts of that podcast and start off the story. Let's get into some more supernatural news. We've got a lot to cover in a very short amount of time. Tim, where are we going next?
Well, Dave, it turns out that the moon may need an MRI. A giant mysterious mass was found beneath the surface of the moon. I think it's just, it could be just a lump. I'm not quite sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Should he have it looked at?
I think he should have it looked at.
Should we turn the moon and cough?
Yep. Turn the moon and cough.
All right.
As I'll make a True Crime Tuesday reference here, we might have to go up and squeeze it till it bleeds.
Oh, God. All right. Go on.
Astronomers have discovered a puzzling and rather sizable mass of metallic material beneath the surface of the moon. The intriguing find, announced this week in a paper published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters, is reportedly located under an enormous crater dubbed the South Pole Aiken Basin. You know, when my basin's aching, Dave, I just use a little bit of Tiger Rub on it.
Right down there by your South Pole?
That's right, right down by the South Pole, which covers a whopping 1,240 miles of the lunar surface. That's a big South Pole, if you ask me. While analyzing data from NASA projects that looked at the gravity and topography of the moon, scientists were surprised to spot an anomaly in the crater that left them scratching their heads. Imagine taking a pile of metal five times larger than the big island of Hawaii and burying it underground. Lead author Peter B. James marveled in a press release announcing the discovery. That's roughly how much unexpected mass we detected.
Wow.
Specifically, the odd anomaly sits around 180 miles beneath the lunar surface. The prevailing theory among the researchers is that the mystery mass may be a remnant of the asteroid which struck the moon and created the South Pole Aiken Basin.
So this large mass is right by the hole. So the mass hole on the moon has a large, what do you say? Like it's plugged up, like it's like there's a large lump in the mass hole.
Yes, Dave. In order to put the picture accurately together, there's a large lump in the mass hole near the South Pole, and it's made the Aiken Basin.
Oh, made the basin Aiken. That sounds right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While that or some other prosaic.
By the way, may I just say?
Yes.
Bacon.
Oh, Bacon Aiken.
Yep.
Now we've done a Bass Ackwards type thing.
That's right.
Yeah. While that or some other prosaic explanation is most likely the case, the remarkable find will undoubtedly pique the interest of conspiracy theorists and space anomaly enthusiasts, because I've run out of words, especially since the oddity happens to be located on the notorious dark side of the moon. And wouldn't it, Dave, if it's on the South Pole in an Aiken Basin?
There is no dark side of the moon, according to Pink Floyd.
That's right. Some imaginative observers have already gone so far as to suggest that the large metallic mass could be an underground base of some kind, or perhaps proof that the moon is actually a spaceship rather than a natural celestial body.
If that's what you say, I'll believe you, Tim.
That's right.
We're going to Mysia, where a government official says the Malika Hospital is not haunted.
Hmm.
But the Changi Hospital in Singapore is.
Well, of course.
Malacca state official Mr. Lo Chi Long has said that the pre-war Malacca Hospital is not haunted, unlike the old Changi Hospital in Singapore. Malacca Hospital was opened on the 12th of February, 1934, and saw patients from all around the area. The British-era hospital also treated military personnel and civilians during World War II. Now, Mr. Low, the chairman of the State Health and Anti-Drugs Committee, made the remark to Malaysian publication The Star as he revealed that Malacca is considering the possibility of implementing ghost tours at haunted historical sites in order to boost tourism, revealing that he has been to Malacca Hospital late at night and that even the security guards have not experienced any form of paranormal activity. Mr. Low said that the hospital will not be included in the potential program since it's just not haunted. Now, the Changi Hospital is a now-defunct and abandoned general hospital located in Changi, Singapore. Its closure came with the merging of the former Tau Pio Hospital. Lots of words that are hard to say. And was renamed for the Changi General Hospital, which relocated new operations to nearby Simi, not far from Changi. It began winding down activities in February of 1977, completely abandoned later that year in December, where it still remains abandoned to this day. Now, since its abandonment, many horror stories and paranormal tales have emerged from the place, ranging from tales of an alleged nurse roaming the compound to poltergeist activity haunting the old hospital. Old Changi Hospital, as it's popularly known, was famously declared by many Singaporeans, young and old alike, to be one of the most haunted locations in the whole country. The buildings are said to be haunted by the souls of the victims of the Japanese occupation, homeless ghosts, and the spirits of those who died in the hospital. Back in 2017, a video of sightings of a nurse carrying a baby in the haunted hospital circulated around the internet, sparking debate on its authenticity and the spookiness of the former hospital and the supposed paranormal activities inside. Until now, the authenticity of this video has not yet been proven. Some of the more prominent areas of the hospital that is said to be haunted includes the old mortuary, which has since been demolished, the tile-walled operating theater, and the old hospital's ancient and emergency, the A&E building. Oh, I'm sorry, accident, not ancient. The accident and emergency building located below the hill from where the main hospital is located. There is also widespread belief of the presence of supposed underground bunkers beneath Changi Hospital from the days that it was a military base, although there is no currently available access to them and their alleged entry points, where there are rumored to be three. Those are closed off. Accounts of alleged paranormal encounters at Changi Hospital are widely available online, but it must be noted that there is almost no substantial proof that has emerged to back these up, aside from several photos or videos taken outside or within the abandoned hospital. I like it. There's no proof except for the photos and videos that prove it. But other than that, not any other proof.
Not a shred.
Just those pieces of proof. Mm-hmm. All right, Tim, where are we off to next?
Off to Michigan, Dave, where a congressional candidate claims to be a government psychic. I mean, why not? Double dip.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A man running for a seat in the House of Representatives claims to have a most unusual occupation. He claims to be a government psychic. Kevin Seaman, yes, Kevin Seaman's a government psychic, say it 10 times fast, reportedly made the odd disclosure in an announcement of his candidacy in the 94th district race to be held in 2020 this week. Not that the race will be held this week, but he made the announcement this week. In that race to be held in 2020. In the statement, he explained that he had been forced to be, or to keep his work, rather, a secret when he previously ran for office, but has apparently now been given permission from the powers that be. Oh, good. According to Seaman, he boasts the military title of Senior Commander Commando Legionnaire. That's an actual title, Dave. And he is based out of Saginaw, Michigan. Beyond that, he revealed that I am also Federal Agent White Knight 196. James Bond is 007. I am 196. Evidently, he's way back in the numbering. Yeah. He says, I am a real-life government psychic. Speaking to an area newspaper about the strange disclosure, Seaman indicated that the statement was his attempt to come out in the open about what I do. Unfortunately, the aspiring state representative did not provide any additional insight into what exactly it is that he does as a purported government psychic, but we're guessing it also involves some kind of espionage. Well, one might think that being a clandestine clairvoyant for the feds would provide Seaman with some truly fantastic ideas improving his community. His platform is actually fairly run-of-the-mill, as it focuses on the usual issues surrounding the economy, education, and crime. As he alluded to in his announcement, this is not Seaman's first attempt at being elected at office. That means he's a terrible psychic. Having lost in a race for the same seat he is currently running for, now back in 2016, this, of course, begs the question of how a well-vetted and rigorously tested psychic who wound up displaying such powers that he became employed by the government so that they could harness his abilities could not have foreseen that his election 2 years ago was an exercise in futility.
An exercise in futility, you say?
Yeah.
Interesting. Speaking of interesting and Michigan, Tim?
Yeah.
There's something pretty cool coming up very soon.
Okay, yeah.
It is the 10th annual Michigan Paracon.
Oh, yeah.
That's taking place in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. It is amazing how many paranormal celebrities will be under one roof. I'll just rattle off a few names for you.
Please.
Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters. Amy Allen from Dead Files. Nick Groff from Ghost Adventures, Paranormal Lockdown, The Ghosts of Shepherdstown. James Bobo Fay, Chasing Bigfoot. Amy Bruni from Kindred Spirits and Ghost Hunters. Brian Kano from Haunted Collector, Chip Coffey, Adam Berry, Dustin Perry, Andrea Perrin, Cliff Brackman, Elizabeth Saint, John Tenney, Barry Kling, Brad Kling, Robert Murch, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Jeff Belanger, Dave Schrader, Tim Dennis, Greg Newkirk, Dana Newkirk, Tim Shaw, Greg Lawson, Rebecca Smuck, Tim Ellis, Brad Blair, the Slackjaw Punks, the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and Occult, Murch's Museum of Talking Boards, and many more announcements. It's going to be coming August 22nd through the 24th at the Sault Ste. Marie Kawaden Museum. This is an amazing event, jam-packed, lots to do. So come on out and get your information at darknessevents.com. Darknessevents.com. Scroll down, click on the link, and join Tim and I. I think that's our only, well, that and Chicago Paracon later this year are the only two times you'll be able to see both of us together in one place. So we'd love for you to join us at the conference. Also coming up, The Nightmare Before Halloween, September 6th, 7th, and 8th in Minnesota. Crypticon Minneapolis is back. Horror movies, horror celebrities, and the paranormal come together for one of the premier paranormal horror cons, and it's just a great time. Plus, my Darkness Radio Phantoms of France events in September 15th through the 24th. If you would like to go with me to France and investigate some of the most haunted locations in the country, then please go check it out there. And then wrapping up the year, we have the Chicago Hauntings 2019 Chicago Ghost Conference that will be taking place. All that information on every event we'll be a part of for this year and into next year are all placed conveniently at darknessevents.com. Go check it out for yourself right now. All right, Tim. The Winchester Mystery House is soon going to become unhinged. The immersive horror experience debuts at the San Jose Landmark in early September for a two-month select night run. You can bet that the Winchester Mystery House, with all of its doorways and entryways and rooms and windows, have plenty of hinges. In fact, going around and counting each door connecting contraption hinge by hinge might take a person a very long time, given that the construction on the San Jose Landmark lasted for decades. That's because owner Sarah Winchester, wanting to appease the spirits, kept the human-held hammers hammering at all hours, quite famously. So hinging it up around the mansion, anyone doing so would need to spend a few weeks or months at the eerie and expansive abode. But what if you could skip the hinge counting and become unhinged? Several fans of the phantasmical abode will do just that. Beginning September 6th, 2019, that's when the all-new immersive horror experience opens up at Sarah Winchester's Epic of Size Estate, an event that's going to put a fresh and fearsome spin on the Halloween season for visitors. Those visitors will step into a real-life psychological and paranormal thriller while exploring the dark hallways of the cursed Winchester Estate. The team behind this skin-tingly treat, Theme Dream Productions, with the scribes from San Francisco's The Speakeasy, the immersive theatrical treat, lending the spooky story vibes. This will happen after the sun goes down, by the by, Tim, making it all more macabre for guests who want to join. The ticket on sale date, turn your gaze upon the first day of August, but don't delay. If you dilly-dally, you might be one of those ethereal beings that gets passed up and left behind. Check out Unhinged. There will only be 28 nights in all during the September 6th to November 2nd run. Have you been searching for a new route to Rome on one of Earth's most mysterious residents? This could be it. All you have to do is check it out. And if your first name, what is this? And if this is your first time at the Winchester, what a memorable way to see inside all of those many, many hallways, stairwells, and shadow-filled rooms. And speaking of rooms, oh yes, get excited. You'll spy some spaces that have never been available on public tours before.
Very cool.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. All right. Where are we off to next?
Well, we're headed to India, Dave, where an Indian news channel suggests that a missing military plane was taken by aliens.
What?
Yeah. A television channel in India is under fire for suggesting that a military aircraft that went missing earlier this month was actually taken by aliens. The puzzling disappearance of an Indian Air Force transport aircraft on June 3rd captivated the country and garnered considerable media coverage as an extensive search for the lost airliner turned up nothing. In the absence of any information on the plane's whereabouts, speculation began to run rampant and apparently spilled over onto the airwaves of TV station Zee Rajasthan. During a bizarre segment discussing the missing airliner, an anchor with the channel put forward the fantastic argument that the plane had been taken away by aliens. Fortunately for viewers who could not conceive of such a scenario taking place, the program featured a rather rudimentary animation showing a classic flying saucer encountering the aircraft and subsequently capturing it via a beam. Adding one extra layer of weirdness to the story, the anchor reportedly theorized that the sinister aliens behind the plane's disappearance were working with the Chinese government. Well, of course they were. Why wouldn't they be? As one can imagine, the outlandish extraterrestrial hypothesis was met with harsh criticism from viewers in India who lambasted the station for making a mockery of the missing airliner. Zee Rajasthan wound up looking even worse this week when Indian Air Force officials announced that they had found the wreckage of the crashed airliner and that none of the 13 passengers survived the tragic accident. The situation is strikingly similar to something which actually took place on American television a few years ago when a CNN anchor postulated that perhaps Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 had been sucked into a black hole.
Well, there's different theories. That one's certainly out there, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
About the Malaysian flight or about the Indian?
Just overall. I mean, it's weird that nothing has happened since. I mean, we really have nothing more to go on.
Well, there was the news story that there was slight wreckage from that Malaysian flight that was found in the ocean. I mean, just little bits and pieces.
Well, but there was nothing that they could truly identify as part of that flight. They were just assuming.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
I tend to think that it's probably somewhere deep in the ocean somewhere.
Tim, we're going to take a look at some sports news now.
Oh.
I know you're a sports fanatic.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
As the Golden State Warriors play their final games before moving to San Francisco next season, they'll be leaving behind more than just memories in Oakland. If you're a paranormal believer, they'll be inclined to think that they might be losing one of the NBA's strangest competitive edges. It's no secret among ghost hunters that the Claremont Hotel, perched in the hills above the East Bay, is haunted. For as long as the hotel has stood, ghost stories have dodged its halls. The Claremont has also served as a temporary home for visiting NBA teams over the years, as some squads stayed in the historic rooms before games at Oracle Arena. Oracle Arena, Tim? Just saying. And although most likely they had a good, quiet night's sleep, it occasionally turned into a house of horrors for NBA stars, rattling their nerves and keeping them up before Warriors games. Sounds like the Brewers putting people up at the Pfister Hotel, Tim.
Ah, yes, the Pfister.
The Pfister in Wisconsin is known for that as well. And many people that have stayed there, sports figures, have not gotten good night's sleeps, have been very upset by it. Now, in 2014, it was widely reported that several members of the San Antonio Spurs experienced strange activity in the hotel before a Warriors game. The haunting was severe enough that it even unnerved Tim Duncan. The ordeal started when teammate Jeff Ayers found his hotel key didn't work for the room he was assigned. Inside the room, he could have sworn he heard voices, so Ayers called down to the front desk. They're like, we can't get you a new key and send you up with security. They're like, we can get you a new key and send you up with security and make sure nobody's there because there shouldn't be anybody in there. Then they're like, we'll just get you a new room. It was the creepiest thing. That's what Ayers told the San Antonio Express back in 2014. I heard a couple other guys heard babies in the hallways and kids running up and down. It was creepy. I really heard voices and a baby in the room, and there wasn't anybody there. It was crazy. I heard a baby in his room, confirmed Duncan. There was something or someone in his room. Yeah, I definitely heard something. It wasn't creepy because I assumed it was really somebody in the room, and they gave me the wrong room. But when they told me the story the next day about calling up there and no one was in the room, it's at that point you just get chills. I totally agreed with him. There was a baby there. Absolutely. I heard about the history of the place, and I'd rather not stay there again. Although neither player specified at the time the Claremont's room 422 is supposedly its most haunted. Many tales tell the link of a six-year-old girl to the room, perhaps corroborating the Spurs' claims of hearing babies cry. A search through hundreds of local newspaper stories about the Claremont uncover no such tale. However, there were a number of violent deaths reported near the hotel, including a man in 1913 who was crushed by a runaway horse-drawn trailer and a 16-year-old Oakland girl named Ruby who died after falling from her bike down an embankment. But in any case, as it so often goes with purported hauntings, the stories do continue. Several requests for comment from the Claremont have not been returned, but they're willing to believe that perhaps a hotel ghost intercepted those calls, Tim, for this article on LMT Online.
Want to know something interesting? Our friend, the Beer City Bruiser, was in town about a month and a half ago.
Yes.
And I went out to check him out at a local card, and he told me that since we had him on the show, on the Jericho Cruise, remember we asked him the question about, have you ever run into a situation at hotels that you'd stayed at where you had run into ghosts? And he had said, no, he hadn't. He said, you know what? You guys jinx me. Since you asked me that question, I've run into situations where I run into haunted situations in hotels. And he told me about where he was rooming with Silas Young, The Last Real Man, in ROH situations, Ring of Honor situations, where they were staying at, I don't remember if it was Baltimore or one of the hotels on tour, where they ran into a situation where someone kept knocking on the door. And nobody was there, and they thought somebody was playing with them. And there was another situation, I believe, with like faucets running. And Silas was getting creeped out about it, and he kept yelling at Bruiser, talking about, you know, because Bruce is really into the paranormal. And Silas is getting upset about it. And he was getting mad at Bruiser about it, which is really, really funny. So, yeah, Bruiser was saying, yeah, I think you guys jinxed me. So shout out to Bruiser. He's now having paranormal experiences while he's on the road.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. How many more news stories do you have there, Tim?
Let's see. We've got, looks like we've got three left.
All right. I've got one left. You've got three left. Go ahead. What's our next story?
The Finnish Coast Guard has encountered a three-headed sea monster.
What?
Yeah. The Finland's Coast Guard has been forced to send out a patrol boat to investigate an odd report of a three-headed sea monster spotted lurking in the waters of the coast of the country. The weird sighting reported occurred this past weekend as fog settled over the Gulf of Finland, and a spotter within the service noticed a weird interloper that seemed to resemble some kind of mythical creature. Uncertain of what to make of such an observation, a scout was dispatched to the scene to get to the bottom of the bizarre incident. Upon getting a closer look at an oddity, Coast Guard officials determined that the monster was actually a Russian yacht en route to Norway for a festival. Having slain the mysterious beast, the department promptly posted a picture of the vessel on social media, marveling at their weird weekend encounter. Fortunately, the Finnish Coast Guard had a good sense of humor about the whole affair and didn't try to sensationalize the sighting like their colleagues in the Indian Army did with some Yeti prints a few months ago. So there you go.
Wow. Clear shot over their bow, I see.
I guess, right?
All right, what's your next story?
The next story has to do with a 40,000-year-old severed wolf's head found in Siberia. A Siberian man searching for mammoth tusks amid melting permafrost was taken aback when he stumbled upon a severed head of a wolf that turned out to be 40,000 years old. The remarkable find was reportedly made last year as Pavel Efimov walked along the shore of a river in the district of Yakutia. He subsequently turned it over to scientists who kept the discovery under wraps until they unveiled it this week at an event in Tokyo. According to experts who examined the remarkable remains, the wolf likely roamed the earth during the Pleistocene era and was considerably bigger than its modern-day counterparts that reside in the region today. The head of the animal alone is said to measure 16 inches, which is around half the size of the modern gray wolf's whole body. Scientists were particularly excited about the discovery because of its well-preserved nature. To that end, not only were the animal's teeth and fur still intact, but so was its brain. As to how or why the wolf's head wound up being severed from its body, experts postulated that the ancient decapitation was probably not the work of human hands, because the region where it was found was not settled by people until a period long after the event actually took place. Despite only having the head to work with, scientists hope to reconstruct the complete creature from some kind of display in the future, while only studying the DNA of the ancient wolf to gain new insights into the long-departed canines, which once called Siberia home.
Or were they giant werewolf heads, Tim?
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah.
Just throwing it out there. Our final two stories are here. Since we're talking weird beasts, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
An Okanagan man believes that he has captured the most conclusive piece of evidence yet of the legendary and elusive lake monster in the Okanagan known as the Ogopogo.
Oh.
Jim LaRock was enjoying his mother-in-law's lakefront property with his two children in Caledon.
Oh.
K-A-L-E-D-E-N, right. British Columbia. Hmm. On June 1st, when he says he noticed an inexplicable wake on the Skaha Lake, LaRock scrambled to record the mysterious ripples breaking through the lake's glassy surface. His son was waiting on a paddleboard nearby. Eventually, he turns and sees a flipper come out of the water and hit the water. And that's when he turned around and started coming back in quickly, LaRock said. The longtime Okanagan resident said he couldn't believe his eyes. LaRock believes he witnessed a giant serpentine creature swimming across the lake with at least seven fins paddling in perfect sync. He estimates that it was at least 36 meters. That's 120 feet long in real measurements, Tim.
Wow.
I describe it as like a dragon boat race, like with oars. So if you flip the dragon boat upside down, you would see all of those oars coming out of the water, he said. LaRocque owns the Fairview Liquor Store. Oh.
Uh-huh.
In Pentagon, although he does have video footage of it, British Columbia, and curious customers have been stopping by to get a glimpse of the cell phone video for themselves. I don't know what it could be. That's pretty weird. It's not like normal waves, customer Jesse Duchel said. At first, I was thinking maybe just waves, but there's obviously something more there, liquor store employee Jack Holman said. Tales of the snake-like creature, similar to Scotland's Loch Ness monster, have been making waves in Okanagan for the past century. According to Bill Stusick, who runs a website documenting Ogopogo sites, the legend dates back to the early 1700s, when the First Nations knew of a water beast in Lake Okanagan, the Kelowna retiree, who has dedicated his life to proving the creature's existence after his own encounter in 1978, is skeptical of LaRocque's alleged sighting, though. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Skeptical of what could be the best video footage ever. By watching this video, I don't believe it. I don't believe it's evidence that a lake monster exists, he told Global News. We have much better shots and videos here in Okanagan over the years that would confirm a species of something in the lake. Stusick said that the majority of sightings are on Okanagan Lake, meaning the creature would have to travel through the Pentagon Dam and channel to reach Skaha Lake near Maybe there's just more than one creature. Just throwing that out there. Yeah. We're going to believe in the creature. Why can't we believe there's more than one? I believe that this used to be all one connecting lake, Okanagan and Skaha, and there's rumors that there are caverns deep down because the lake is so deep. They still don't know in spots truly how deep it goes, LaRocque said. Stusick said a self-proclaimed legend hunter is also unconvinced based on the reported size of the creature. There's never been really any reports of anything that big, he said. Well, then what is it? What are you seeing? You debate that this is Ogopogo. You believe in Ogopogo. But I don't understand the mindset on this.
Yeah.
I think it's a product of overturn that happens seasonally when layers of the lake temperature and depths will pass each other, he said. Where the layers pass each other, they form a wake. These waves only form when there is no other waves to mix it. Young has studied the myth of Ogopogo and says emotions tend to overpower logic. People don't like knowing that they have an explanation. They come up with myths and legends. It's not surprising to me that people would want to hang on to the idea of a mythical lake monster, he said. Regardless of any logic or explanation, LaRocque is still a believer. And if anything, it proves the legend is still very much alive. I can't wait until everyone sees the video. It will make you a believer. That's what LaRocque says. I'm going to watch that video right now, Tim. So in a kind of weird Mystery Science Theater 3000 way,
yeah,
I'm going to narrate the video as it plays out and let you know with my skilled eyes, Tim.
Sure.
With the peepers that I have been given.
Okay.
In 24 seconds when the ad is over and I'm allowed to watch the video, Tim.
Okay.
I will let you know if, in fact, I believe that it is a lake monster or sediment waves that are being seen on a glassy top surface.
What's the ad for?
Seconds. It is for booking now, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Happiness comes in waves, Tim.
Oh, good.
This part of the show is brought to you by Myrtle Beach, where happiness comes in waves.
Nice.
I'm Dave Schrader. Now let's look at the Ogopogo sightings. Okay. Mm-hmm. Legend Hunter sees spike in Ogopogo sightings, it says here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, I see a picture of what clearly looks like a flippery thing popping out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an old photo.
Mm-hmm.
I see an old man with a great set of hair.
Oh, very good.
But perhaps needs some better oral work. I'm just saying. Now we're looking at footage. You see another piece of footage, and this thing looks pretty large.
Mm-hmm.
Then a man in a what used to be known as a wife beater.
Hmm.
We have now politically correct gotten rid of that term. It is now just a really tight white tank top that shouldn't be worn by any human being ever.
Probably.
Now let me see this. Okay, I see the large stretch. I see what they're looking at. No, rogue wave. I'm going to go rogue wave.
Rogue wave?
Yeah, just this kind of a wavy looking thing. I could see from a distance. I could see how it could look flippery.
Yeah.
Now, the first picture they had of the flipper was definitely something three-dimensional popping out of the water. this photograph looks very much to me. This video looks very much to me, Tim, like a ripply wave, like a big ripply wave causing this optic vision.
How does the old guy's hair look? Does it still look pretty good?
It's amazing.
Wow.
He's got Wolverine hair, but it's white. It's nice. White Wolverine hair.
So it's like old man Logan.
A lot of dippity-doo. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
I can see that. I mean, it is an interesting look, but it's a strange looking wave. So there's that. All right. That's it. That's all I've got in the way of news. You've got one more story for us. Let's wrap it up, Tim.
Got one more.
Where are we going next?
This qualifies for most sent on social media and email story of the week. A strange elf was captured on a security camera, or was it a strange elf? A strange video was surfaced purporting to be from security camera footage, which captured what appears to be a creature resembling Dobby the Elf from the Harry Potter film franchise, hard to say.
Film franchise.
A woman calling herself Vivian Gomez published the video on Facebook on June 6th, writing, "So I woke up Sunday morning and saw this on my camera, and I'm trying to figure out what the heck. First, I saw the shadow walking from my front door when I saw this thing. Has anyone else seen this on their cameras? The other two cameras didn't pick it up for some reason. The clip has been shared and tweeted extensively and has over 5 million views. Speculation is rampant that the video was faked, based on inconsistent shadow, strange movements, and evidence of editing. Others have also guessed that the clip shows a puppet or a child in a costume. If you've seen the Dobby the Elf video, you yourself could probably weigh in and tell us what you think."
So what did we learn on today's program? Well, he just may not be that into you. And if that's the case, ladies or gentlemen in a relationship like that, just make a clean break. Mm-hmm. Find the love that you deserve. That's really the point of this.
Yeah.
And if you're an NBA player, stay away from the Bay Area hotels that they try to put you up in. And if you're in Wisconsin, avoid the Pfister.
You want to avoid the Pfister in general. I think that's good advice. Yeah.
So that's kind of, I think, that's our takeaway from today's program, Tim.
Yep.
Those moments. Mm-hmm. And don't eat people. That would be the other takeaway.
That's a good one.
Because apparently you do get tired of it. And I guess I can't bring that person back now that I realize I don't really want to eat humans anymore. So just don't do it.
They go bad after a while.
Yep. Yeah. One bad human spoils the whole bunch, girl. Tomorrow, 22 hours, an American nightmare. We'll be talking to the hosts of a new miniseries true crime podcast here on Podcast One and hear about a very disturbing, strange story. Make sure you tune in for more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.